Faith Middleton in New Haven, and this show is about the richness of life. It's the Book Show, a live call-in. Great reads coming your way in this hour. Thank you for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Let us know about a book you liked. Book Club members, what are you reading? 203-776-9677. That's 203-776-WNPR. You can tell us on Facebook now. Search The Faith Middleton Show or tweet us at FaithWNPR. You know, no matter where I go, people are always talking about, they're either talking about the food schmooze or they're talking about this book show and want to have a whole conversation about a particular book or what was the name of this this book and what was the author. I like this. It starts a great, great conversation all over the place. And so we look forward to this show so, so much and love your participation, whether you're a book club member or just an avid reader, stumbled on something you like, mysteries, fiction, nonfiction, whatever it might be. My book buddies are here, Roxanne Cody of R.J. Julia Booksellers in Madison, Connecticut. Lee Jacobus is away. And Rose Quiello is here, professor at Southern Connecticut State University and Quinnipiac University. Roxanne?
So, Rose, I just want to mention something funny that I had forgotten I had. So I don't know how long I've really been doing the show, but I think it's about 20 years. And we used to do it with Henry Berliner, who had the Foundry Bookstore. Yeah. I have all the books, because I keep notes, so I know for the bookstore. So I have notes going back to the early 90s of all the books that callers talked about, or Henry talked about, or you talked about, or I talked about.
How amazing.
We should, like, put together a book.
I'd like to see that list.
I have to see that.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it's very
list.
Funny.
Okay, so what do you have there to recommend?
Well, last night...
We have gift books, right?
Yeah, we have gift books and serious books and... This book I couldn't not talk about. Scarlett Lewis was at the bookstore last night. She is the mom of a little boy that died in Newtown, Jesse. And the name of the book is Nurturing Healing Love, A Mother's Journey of Hope and Forgiveness. And she did, with this book, a absolutely brilliant job of accomplishing these three things. One is... Jesse was the little boy next to her son, was the little boy next to Victoria Soto, who was the teacher. And when she was shot, a bullet grazed Jesse's head. And he stood there looking the gunman in the eye and yelled for everybody to run, to just run. And eight or nine kids ran and lived. And then Jesse was shot in the forehead. And this is the way the book opens. And Scarlett Lewis goes on to describe that she considered this a calling. That you teach, you choose to love. And started the Jesse Lewis Choose to Love Foundation. And she talks about how she's going through that journey, why she thinks this matters. There have been, like, lots of signs that she has had from Jesse that she feels are encouraging her. She was so remarkable and inspiring. So you would think that this book would leave you in a puddle of tears, and you're left the opposite. And she doesn't want you to be in a puddle of tears. At all. So it's called Nurturing Healing Love by Scarlett Lewis.
Thank you, Roxanne. Rose Quiello. Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on one second, Rose. Michael, Faith Middleton, welcome to our book show.
Oh, hello, Faith.
Hi, Michael.
That's the one I saw. That's fantastic. I like fantasy books, and I don't think they get enough attention. And the one I'm recommending is The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss.
Who's the author again?
Patrick Rothfuss. It's his first series of books. It's a trilogy, and the last one's coming out in, I think, next year.
And how do you spell the last name?
R-O-T-H-F-U-S-S, Rothfuss.
Rothfuss, okay. Oh. Ah, great. Well, this is good to know about. Now, so what do you like about this series?
It's realistic while still having, I guess, magic and
yeah.
But it's one of those books where the characters, the main focus of the, it, you know, it, it follows his, I don't know.
His journey?
I'm terribly articulate, I think.
No, you're doing fine. So it follows his journey, and so you get invested in him.
Yeah, and the people around him, and they're all very believable.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'm glad you called. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. A lot of people into fantasy, we're finding.
It's huge.
Huge. It's become bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm curious about that. I wonder, is it the time we're living in? Is it that publishers have jumped in on this? Has the market grown for a particular reason? You know, is it connected to a particular television series? I'm just really fascinated with the growth of that category.
You know, it's an interesting question. It started with the kids, right? So it started with like YA books. And I think part of it, I think there's like three parts to it. I'm making this up, obviously. One is it's, you know, the ultimate of escapism. The other is it's tied into the video games, right? Are very much fantasy related. So I think it's been reinforced by all of that. So whatever's driving, that is also driving it. The other is, I think that fantasy books from 20 years ago looked like they were the best predictors of where things were going,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm. Yeah.
But they're huge. They're huge from an every age group. And I can't say that I've ever read that many of them, but it makes me want to begin to read them.
Yeah, Rose, you might have a comment about this because you're a professor. Also, you know, when you're not being a nurse, you're all over the map in terms of doing important work. So when you talk with students, what are they saying? Do they seem interested in fantasy?
Well, my students are very interested in fantasy, and I'm wondering why I'm not. When I teach a novel, they will say, well, that reminds me, and you ought to read this book. And I'm not drawn to fantasy, and I'm not drawn to science fiction. And I'm wondering what's lacking in me.
Well, I'm just curious. I'm floating this. This is a kind of wild speculation. But, you know, I'm thinking to myself, as life has felt unpredictable mm-hmm. these last 5 years with mm-hmm. the economy, the political situation, Is it a way of having seizing back some feeling of control? You know, that you're in this world with these people, and people, there's a kind of feeling of invention about everything that's going on. I don't know. I'm just.
So how about this? How about if we each agree to read a fantasy book for the next time or the time after that, and talk about what we did and didn't like about it.
Yeah, okay.
Let's do that.
Yeah, okay.
We'll each pick
one. How do
one.
We know what we're, yeah, what should we?
I'll give a list. I'll send a list.
You will? Okay, good. Okay, give us
some choices.
But can we start at the beginning of the series? Because I
won't well, you have
any,
to.
Okay, good.
I'll give you some. Kathy Sharp at the bookstore is like a genius about this.
Fantastic.
Okay. All right.
But I had a thought. I love C.S. Lewis's comment when he says, we read to know we are not alone. And so when I read fantasy, or once I was asked to do a science fiction seminar at the Guilford Library, I mean, I don't relate to that stuff. And the reason I read is to connect with these characters and to know that I'm not alone, that there's a shareability. I read a wonderful quote recently, pain is all the same, it's the details that are different. And I thought, you know, that's why I read. And so I don't connect with these fantasy books and this science
fiction. Here's the thing. Did you ever read, I don't know if as you're listening you remember the series Clan of the Cave Bear.
Sure, the Jean Owl.
Jean Owl.
A-U-E-L.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I
loved them. Those.
Now, you could make the case, although somebody who's into fantasy is going to call now and say that I'm nuts, but you could make the case that was
the beginning of the arc.
Yeah, like a fantasy book in some sense, because here you were with the first people, you know, humans walking around, and there it was all very tribal society, but very complex relationships, and the start of the gender wars, and I, you know, it didn't feel like anything that I had ever read before.
Well, you know, here's another way to think about it. You know, one of my favorite quotes is from The Art of Possibility by the Zanders, Z-A-N-D-E-R. And one of the things that they talk about, that art creates flights of fancy and rearranges the brain. And so when I think about fantasy or science fiction, one of the maybe the sort of twists to take on thinking about it is it's art. It is a form of art. And if it has the potential to rearrange your brain, then it is an experience like all cultural experiences. And maybe that's what we're missing. Maybe we're looking for something else from it than that. But it's a way of, you know, I always love in the studio here, there's a picture of Michael Jordan with his arms extended in one hand holding a basketball. And I always consider this picture inspirational. And I think it adds to how we feel in this room. Well, maybe science fiction and fantasy does that. So we're going to try it.
It is magic. Yeah. It's a magic world. And so it allows you to keep, you know, calls up on your imagination.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful way of saying that.
Yeah.
Peter, Faith and the Gang, welcome to our book show.
Hi, Faith. I just want to say Merry Christmas because I'm sure I won't get a chance to do that again.
Thanks. Same to you.
So my book is, it's called A Long Walk. It's about a Polish soldier who escapes from a Russian prison camp, and he travels through the winter and the snow, escaping Russia, and his travels into actually Mongolia, and he meets people along the way who are also escaping as well, other soldiers and a young girl who escapes her family looking for a better life. And it just tells about their travels, and most of the people don't make it to the end, except this one gentleman, and he makes it to the Himalayas where he finds his peace. And it's a really great book. It's called A Long Walk. I'm not sure who the author is.
No, that sounds good. That book sounds really good. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Glad you called. The Long Walk. We'll find out who the author is. We're going to take a quick break. We've got books on tables everywhere. You can hardly get around in this room. So we have lots of great reads to tell you about. And we hope you will call and tell us about one, too, at 203-776-9677. The book show returns in a short while. We'll be right back. Faith Middleton, it's great to have you listening here on The Book Show, Fresh Edition. We love to get your calls, hearing from you about a great read, because that spreads the word. And I love hearing this. And we hear from people all the time that they're trying so hard to write these down. You know, they're on our site. You can go to our site at WNPR.org. Just give us a little while to get those posted up there. Ernie, Faith Middleton, welcome to The Book Show with Roxanne Cody and Rose Quiello. Go ahead.
Hi, Faith.
Hi, Ernie.
I was listening to you talking about science fiction, and I wanted to chime in on another reason why science fiction is valuable.
And why do you think?
My wife, who passed away several years ago, was a middle school teacher of remedial students, and she wrote an article called "Tomorrow for Nonbelievers: A Study of Books for Young People" by Robert A. Heinlein, and it was published in Science Fiction Commentaries. That's a fanzine published in Australia. But what she had briefly to say, Faith, was to live in the unique world of the junior high school is to live tumultuously, absurdly, fearfully, and outrageously in today. Yesterday never happened, and tomorrow probably won't. Today is it, all there is. The rest is only more adult lies. So that's why she introduced these science fictions to get her students to think about tomorrow.
Oh, Ernie, what a great thing to do. Thank you so much.
Okay,
what a great woman. Thank you so much, Ernie.
Thank you.
Yeah, oh, really. Happy holiday to you.
Same to you.
Okay, thank you. 203-776-9677. Roxanne, do you have a gift book idea?
I've got a couple of gift book ideas. So one is Billy Collins, my favorite person. It has a new collection of poems out. It's called Aimless Love, and it has some new poems, and I'd like to read a little short one.
Okay.
It's called My Hero. Just as the hare is zipping across the finish line, the tortoise has stopped once again by the roadside, this time to stick out his neck and nibble a bit of sweet grass. Unlike the previous time when he was distracted by a bee humming in the heart of a wild flower. So that's one gift idea. And then
okay, go ahead.
The other is Dave Thompson, who's a movie critic, has a book out called Moments That Made the Movies.
That Billy Collins book
yes.
is called, I just want to make sure.
Aimless Love.
Aimless Love. Okay.
Yeah,
now this
sorry.
Is.
Moments That Made the Movies. So what Dave Thompson does is take all these old movies and takes these moments in them that have defined film. So, for instance, in one movie, he talks about the relationship between Spencer Tracy and Betty Davis.
Oh.
And they said, you know, they always think of Betty Davis as not being this attractive woman. Well, the eroticness between the two of them in this film, which is 20,000 Years at Sing Sing or something, was extraordinary. But then Spencer Tracy was transferred to another studio, and that ended. Anyway, for any movie lover, Moments That Made the Movies by David Thompson.
And we're having David Thompson on this show on January 7th.
Oh, great.
For a call-in show, so we can't wait for that because we love this.
Oh, don't you love this?
When this came in the door, we said, oh, what fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a great gift book idea, Roxanne. Okay, I wanted to quickly mention, Rose, that Alyssa Altman has, you know, it came out in the summer, but I'm just getting to it, unfortunately, so I apologize to that for that. A book called, it's a memoir, Poor Man's Feast. And this is a story of, well, as they say, comfort, desire, and the art of simple cooking. And Alyssa Altman is a James Beard Award-winning writer. She does the blog Poor Man's Feast, which has won many awards and is written for a lot of different places. She's terrific. And it is the loveliest story. It is just terrific. So if you are looking for, you know, memoir has become... it has to be have a certain kind of terrible heaviness, and giant tragedies must occur, and some kind of major dysfunction in the life. Well, this is a kind of rich, lovely story. Poor Man's Feast, and if you like food, it's just terrific. A love story of comfort, desire, and the art of simple cooking. This is also includes the story of when Alyssa met her partner, Susan, and they came from completely different worlds in terms of food. Fancy and simple.
Mm.
Had to merge somehow. It's the story of how they negotiate that.
So, cute.
Sort of a
very
metaphor,
sweet.
Huh?
Yeah, very wonderful. Okay, so Rose, what do you have? And then we'll go to
yeah, so I wanted to talk about a novel by Margaret Wrinkle called Wash. And Roxanne just sighed. And white writers really take a risk when they delve into telling a novel from the perspective of a black person. And Margaret Wrinkle just jumps right into the river and tackles this subject head on and beautifully without caricature and all of the trappings. And this is the story. And let me just say that I've taught slave narratives. And so this is not a foreign issue to me. But I had no idea. This is the story of slave breeding that went on in the 1800s with the Western expansionism and this need for power. And what she does, I think, so beautifully. So here we have Wash, who's short for Washington. His name is abbreviated for Washington. And he's a sire for a revolutionary veteran called Richardson. And he's meant to breed slaves. But Richardson, he doesn't want a slave like Washington who can find a place in himself to hide, to find an escape, who is revolutionary. This is not the kind of slave that needs to be bred. I mean, he wants docile, sort of the yellow lab of the humanity. Yeah. Nice, quiet, docile, fun. And anyway, this story takes us into, I think one of the morals is what happens when good people like Richardson, do bad things because they need money, because he's trying to stave off debt. This is a direct confrontation with a period in our history that we're not happy about, but this is a not to be, you cannot put this novel down. Mm. Wash by Margaret Wrinkle.
Ah, okay. And Roxanne, you have another gift book idea.
These are my two favorite gift books. One is called Central Park by Andrew Zega and Eames. It is this beautiful picture book that takes all the parts of Central Park, talks a little bit about how it was designed, built, its timing, then shows original photographs, paintings. Like, I love Central Park. To me, mm-hmm. it's the most perfect park anywhere. And if you have anybody, this is, I'm bringing mine home from here. It's just absolutely gorgeous. It's mm-hmm. called Central Park, and it's by Andrew Zega. And the other one is called Tree Houses. And it is the most fantastic, you know, it's a coffee table book, gorgeous photographs, the most fantastical tree houses, you know, that you would move into in a minute. They're modern, they're old fashioned, they're equipped with things you could like live in forever or for a minute. So those are my two top picks for a coffee table.
So Jonathan, I'm talking to our producer, Jonathan McNichol, about including this book when we do our show on houses.
Ah.
And all kinds of forms of living. We're going to look at all
it
kinds
is gorgeous.
Of structure. So we have to conclude that.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So thank you, Roxanne.
There's two books.
Okay, very good. Stephen Faith Middleton with the gang. Welcome to the book show.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just thinking about the whole conversation about fantasy books and why they've taken off so much these days. And I think your commentators there are quite right, but there's an additional factor, and that's sort of the one that, you know, parents to children, because I remember Tolkien, and I think of him as kind of the gateway to all of this.
Yep.
You know, he wrote the trilogy, oh, I think they finally were finished in the early 50s, but I think he wrote most of that during the war and started before the war, World War II, that is. And they were out there, but kind of under the radar. And then when I was in college in the late 60s and with the hippies and that whole aspect of things, the trilogy just exploded. It became a bestseller. And I'm not particularly interested in fantasy. It's not normally my cup of tea, but I read that, and I probably reread that whole series several times. I love it so much. And
isn't
I think
that great?
It got, you know, there was a generation that just passed it down to the kids of this generation. And then you combine that with computer-generated graphics, which enables all of that sort of thing to come to the screen, where before it wasn't really so possible. And you've got a dynamite combination, and I think that's a lot of what has made this genre so popular.
Wow, thank you so much. I really appreciate your comments.
Not at all.
All right.
And just for my favorite, I my plug, because I like historical fiction.
Oh.
I really think and I think he suffers because he's such a popular author, but Ken Follett's trilogy that's in the works now, that started off with Fall of Giants and I think that's a fabulous, fabulous work in progress.
Yeah, so many people love that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Right, bye.
Bye. Roxanne, do you have a gift book before I mention Frank Tavares?
Yep. So for the business person or the young person graduating from college, one of my favorite business books that's out, it's called Hatching Twitter. It's by Nick Bolton. And what Nick Bolton does with this book is, one, he takes all the strands of the tech world, what startup world is like, how did that all happen? Then he's got all the political intrigue that goes on between these founders and people forcing people in and out. You know, they like to make believe that the tech startup world is like another planet. It's the same old corporate titans who like power and ambition and And then what Nick Bolton does is he's just a great storyteller. Mm-hmm. And so you get the whole arc of this incredible journey.
And why do you think it's an important business book to hear this story?
Well, I think from this standpoint, one is you learn, like when these guys started Twitter, they did what's called iterate, meaning they didn't have the real idea right away. And it's not like they say, I'm going to invent a lamp. The tech world isn't, I'm going to invent a lamp. It's like smart people who are programmers and dreamers coming together and iterating, changing mm-hmm. till they come up with the thing. Mm-hmm. The other is you understand the IPO market, and B, you understand what it's like to actually build a company, to take something from an idea and then really think about it as a business.
This is Nick Bolton.
Bolton. I'm sorry. Yep. And it's called Hatching Twitter.
Great. Okay. Wanted to jump in quickly and mention that Frank Tavares, who has recently, much to my dismay, stepped down as the voice of National Public Radio. Frank Tavares is the guy who lives in Connecticut and teaches communications at Southern Connecticut State University. That beautiful, glorious voice, which I miss very much, has done a book of short stories. It's called The Man Who Built Boxes. And so this is a very interesting thing for him to do. I read the first story, and I liked it a lot, Frank. So good job, and I can't wait to read more of these. And what a great way to spend your time now, in addition to teaching, Frank Tavares, Tavares, The Man Who Built Boxes. And that book is in paperback. Roxanne, you have a gift book?
So I have a couple of books. One is, this is for kids 7 to 10, and it's called Maps. And it's a great big book with the most beautiful graphics.
Oh, wow.
Like sort of old-fashioned looking graphics. And what they do is first they show you a picture of the continent.
Looks like an old map, sepia tone. Kind
exactly. Of. And then what they do is they have things so you understand what's going on. So like I'm looking at Spain and they've got a guy on a lounge chair relaxing on the beach and they have where strawberries are grown and they've got where mussels are harvested or where oranges are grown or where cheese is grown or where there's sheep or where there's museums. So for 7 to 10-year-olds, it's a great way to get them interested in the world in a robust way, not just by looking at a flat geographic map, but thinking of the richness of what's going on and the specifics of what's going on in that country.
Oh, who did that? Who did this book?
This is published by...
Love that. Oh, okay, we don't know.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't have the publisher handy.
It looks old school in those old school colors.
And it's called Maps.
Like maps from the 40s. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just called Maps.
Maps.
Okay, and you'll know right away. Say it's the kids' book.
Let's say the kids' book.
I would like to, you know, paw through that myself.
Exactly.
So. Brian of Faith Middleton, Roxanne, and Rose. Go ahead. Book show.
Hello?
Hi, Brian.
Hi. I just had a recommendation for you for your fantasy book that you guys might all read.
Okay. What is
it? Oh, good.
It's called The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No.
It's phenomenal. It's beautiful. It's poetic. It's breaks a lot of the conventions of, typical fantasy conventions, which if you guys don't read fantasy, you probably wouldn't know anyway, but...
And how would it be for me, since I don't read fantasy? Would it work?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a great book either
great
way.
Great story. Okay.
But, it just does interesting things, like switches back and forth between first and third person. And it breaks, like, a lot of people feel that in fantasy novels there's not really a lot of sexuality in fantasy novels, and he touches upon some of that.
Oh.
And it's just... But, you know, it's in a tasteful, you know, it's really good.
Well, sex in the future. That's interesting. I've never thought about that. Okay. Well, tell me the name again.
His name is Patrick Rothfuss.
Oh, yes. Oh, I see.
That was our first caller.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks for the recommendation. I wanted to quickly mention The Opposite of Loneliness is not out yet. But it is going to come out in a couple of months. And so this is more a heads up to be looking for this. It is the essays and stories of Marina Keegan. Marina Keegan, with an introduction by Anne Fadiman. Marina Keegan is the graduate of Yale University, a magna cum laude from Yale in last year, 2012. She wrote this essay called "The Opposite of Loneliness," and it's about connection and how that is what she was afraid to give up when she was leaving Yale. The many, many ways, and the way she details what connection is through her experience at school was so powerful. This thing went viral. Suddenly she wrote a play that was going to be produced at the New York Fringe Festival. She had a job waiting for her at the New Yorker because people were so electrified by her writing. And then, unfortunately, just a few days after graduation, there was a car crash on Cape Cod and she died. So her work has been collected in this book, and it is absolutely terrific. Absolutely so, so good. Essays and Stories, The Opposite of Loneliness by Marina Keegan, and that will be out probably in around March, and you'll be hearing a lot about this. I just wanted to mention it in case somebody wants to put in advance orders on that. Quickly, Rose?
Yes.
Do you want to take a break? I think you're asking for a break. Rose, can you hold your breath for, 90 seconds?
I'll try.
Okay. We'll be right back. We have lots of recommendations, lots of gift book ideas to send your way here on The Book Show. We'll be right back. Faith Middleton, and this is a fresh edition of The Book Show. I want to say thanks to our talented team, producer Jonathan McNichol and producer Lori Mack. We have lots of gift books to recommend to you. Roxanne, you made a great comment. We were talking about the slave narrative wash, and Rose, you were saying how much you like the book. And during the break, I loved your comment about why you thought that book was one of your best.
What I thought was amazing is Wash's mother, who was a saltwater slave, meaning she came from Africa, was a woman who had interior strength of an extraordinary level and could live in dignity in the midst of all of that. And what she wanted to pass on to her son, Washington, was the ability to do that. So you could survive intact and with a kind of dignity. And what this book to me is about is Wash's journey to get to that place.
Because he doesn't start out there.
He starts out not that way at all. And as you said at the break, this is in the Viktor Frankl mode, the Nelson Mandela mold, that you come out and you come out whole in a way that you almost can't imagine someone can do by learning your inside dignity.
Yeah, it's a great question in my life, who can come out? Can you practice for this? Who can come out of, we call it the trauma of the everyday, and some of it is huge. And who can come out the other side when some things are so devastating? We're talking about losing your child at Newtown. We could go down the list across
the
world.
And my mother says it's not predictable. My mother, who suffered horrible indignity, says you wouldn't necessarily pick who's brave, who's strong, who's weak, who's becomes culpable. It's an unpredictable thing, and the question is, can it be taught? In Wash, I believe his mother taught him that.
And I might add, she teaches him that through the natural world.
Okay. Great, Rose. Thank you so much. And, through the natural world. That's interesting. Rose, do you have a quick book to recommend?
I do. A wonderful book by Vincent Bugliosi, and it's called 4 Days in November. And this is a distillation of the 4 days of his huge work reshaping history, was it? 13-volume, million-and-a-half-word, I don't know, exploration of the 4 days before John F. Kennedy's death. I want to say that this takes us into the life of Lee Harvey Oswald. He debunks all the conspiracy theories. He laughs at them. This is a phenomenal read. He comes to understand Lee Harvey Oswald as he calls him a loser who is determined to impact the world. And so when we think about all the conspiracy theories and why we need them so much, he said it was just unimaginable to Americans that one man, a loser with paranoia and just all these this emotional baggage, could take down a president. And so he says we as Americans would not accept that idea. And we went into multiple conspiracy theories. I want to say that this is a nonfiction book. It's the distillation of all that happened, and it reads like a novel. Hmm. It's wonderful.
And it's called?
4 Days in November, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Okay. Joel of Faith Middleton and the Gang here on the Book Show. Go ahead, Joel.
Hi, how are you?
For great, thanks.
Want to say I love this show.
Thank you, Joel.
The book that I would recommend, and they're actually making a movie with Mark Wahlberg, is Lone Survivor.
Uh-huh.
And it's a story of Marcus Luttrell, who was a member of a SEAL team that went into Afghanistan for Operation Red Wings. His whole team was killed due to a decision they made not to kill some local sheep herders. The book is just, it tugs at your heartstrings, and Marcus Luttrell wrote it, and it's just amazing. It talks about the camaraderie between, you know, our servicemen in these positions, and it's just a great read for anyone that's interested in military history, especially the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, thank you, Joel, and that's Lone Survivor.
Lone Survivor by Marcus Luttrell.
Thank you very much.
Rock,
glad you called, and thanks for saying the kind words about the book show. Go ahead.
So I want to mention the Beekman Heirloom Dessert Cookbook. And the Beekman is a farm, and Brent Ridge and Josh Kilmer put this book together. So it's a dessert book organized by the seasons. It's got little place for notes. Here's what it does more than anything. I mean, I'm not a baker, even though I'm a baker's daughter. A, this makes me want to bake. But also, this is the most beautiful cookbook I have ever seen. It is styled and brilliant. It's. I'll show it.
Portrait photography applied to baking. Great fine painters from the Renaissance applied to baking.
Really, if you never want to bake a thing in here, which which you might not, it is a gloriously beautiful book. And I will try to bake. This makes me want to bake. I want to create.
And
what
I want to be there. And
I want
see
to
that
create
happen.
What they're doing.
I want to see. All right, yeah. And that's called
the Beekman Heirloom Dessert Cookbook. It's gorgeous.
Yeah,
gorgeous,
really.
Gorgeous.
Just a great. I want to jump in quickly and say that there is a book that I love, and we've had Barbara Fredrickson on the show, and her book has now come out in paperback. It's called Love 2.0. And she is a research psychologist who studies love. And I don't mean to make this sound superficial in any way. These are very important studies. She was the person chosen to brief the Dalai Lama. She thinks in terms of her theory, watching the brain light up under scans, that we need to redefine the concept of love, because it is clear that the human consciousness processes real connection with another as love. And so we have those moments of connection with each other all the time, all day long. It could be at the supermarket. It could be on the work floor. It could be just, you know, having a glass of wine or a mug of hot chocolate, the quick conversation with the person at the gas station. These are capable of being moments of real connection, and the brain registers them as love, and there are, you know, all kinds of cascading health benefits from that. So, very serious psychologist, not trying to make a case about anything, but said that this research and what the brain is showing so amazing to her and to others who are doing this research. Love 2.0. Really good read, too. She's very, very smart. Roxanne, gift book.
Okay, so this book, I can't read it to you because I'd laugh so loud. It's called Alice in Tumblerland and Other Fairy Tales for a New Generation. So this is a very irreverent book with a fair amount of swear words placed brilliantly. And so it takes like Little Red Riding Hood deciding to walk home from her grandmother's house because she didn't want to spend money on a cab. And then goes on from there. It talks about Cinderella divorcing the prince.
This sounds like
and decided she's not wearing glass slippers anymore. She's going to Crocs.
This is like David Sedaris.
It's a little trim size book. It's called Alice in Tumblerland.
Alice in Tumblerland. Charlie, welcome to the book show.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, first off, I just wanted to say thank you very much for this show. It definitely keeps everybody's mind on an art form that, you know, possibly not enough people are paying attention to in the digital age.
Oh, thanks, Charlie. You think so?
For instance, my wife and I were avid readers, and I made the horrible mistake of buying her one of those Kindle readers, and now we don't have books in the house anymore. All we have is her Kindle.
Oh, okay. Well, it's good on a trip, though, isn't it? Okay,
good. We still read, but you no longer have that actual book anymore. So it's nice to hear you guys talk about it. I mean, there's been several books already that I'm planning on going and grabbing off the shelves.
Oh, nice. Okay, so what do you have to recommend?
I have two that I'd like to mention, because anything that there is out there, as long as it's a gripping story or something that's interesting, I'll read. And to span the spectrum, my first favorite, all-time favorite, is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is kind of like a sci-fi fantasy book by Douglas Adams.
Yep.
It's a phenomenal story for anybody to read if they've never read it. And then to the other side of the spectrum, there's a gentleman, Jeffrey Canada, who he started some schools down in New York to try and help inner-city kids out. And the book he wrote is Fist, Stick, Knife, Gun. And it's a kind of memoir about his life growing up and why it turned him into the person he was. And it really just does a phenomenal job of kind of giving people who don't have so much of an insight of what happens in inner cities, you know, how people turn out the way they turn out, and, you know, why without the education that they so desperately need, why they'll stay that way and stay in these desolate areas and everything. And then right at the end of the book, he gives all these great suggestions on what, you know, that we as Americans can do to help these people out and everything. And honestly,
whether you
agree or disagree with his opinions, the book is just a phenomenal read.
Thank you so much for your comments on the show. Really appreciate
it. Thank you for your show.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy holiday to you.
You too, Faith.
Okay. Bye-bye. I want to jump in quickly and say that we have coming up, I think in about a week, we're going to look at friendship. And we're doing that with Bruce Clements and with Carlin Flora. And she is author of this book called Friend Fluence. And it's about research showing where friendship comes from. This is next Thursday, December 26th. Where friendship comes from historically, why humans did that in terms of needing others to rely on. That's where it begins. Mm. But then the question is, why does it persist? Because we're actually able to be quite independent now as human beings, and yet we have such complex friendships. This is something that continues in human relationships. And so this is a look at the research of why and what friendships actually do. So I'm just saying a little bit from the description here. The powerful, often underappreciated influence on our personalities, habits, physical health, even our chances of success in life. Research findings, the latest, traces friendship from its evolutionary roots to its starring role in childhood and adolescence to its subtle and sometimes not so subtle impact on adults, both positive and negative, online and offline. So it's going to be really interesting to get into this next week. But in case you want to have a look at this beforehand, Carlin Flora in paperback, Friend Fluence. Okay, Roxanne, we've got a gift book idea.
I do. So when I was a little girl, as I'm sure listeners have heard me say before, my parents couldn't read English. but they believed in reading. And so they bought what they could afford, which were golden books. And golden books were, I don't know, they were a dime or a quarter or something. And the story I like to tell is when my mother was having my brother in 1955 at a hospital, she dropped two golden books to my sister and I outside. And so I always feel like books come from heaven, but they're golden books. So golden books did a very smart thing this year. They came out with everything I needed to know. I learned from a little golden book, and it takes the golden book illustrations and it says every day you should get dressed first thing. And it's got little illustrations, have some pancakes, get some exercise. And it's got all these little animals from the books. Daydream, frolic, go on a joyride, stargaze, treat yourself, make music. And it's just, so for those of us that grew up with these books.
It's not a bad idea.
This is magic. And if you didn't grow up with them, I mean, like, look at the cover. It's like a 1950s lady with like a little dog.
And a purse on her wrist.
And her purse. So we can't keep it in stock. We just got it back in. I said, do we have enough for me to talk about it?
For both, are mostly women buying this because of the illustration on the front? Are men buying this too?
You know, I think they both are.
Uh-huh. Okay,
because you know what? It just touches a kind of an innocent, upbeat chord. So everything I need to know, I learned from a little golden book.
I could stand being reminded of, you know, in this busy world, of the things that are in there. Rose, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Great to have you on the show. Go ahead, Rose.
Hi, Faith. I want to say, first of all, I love WMPR. I listen to it all.
Well, on behalf of all my talented colleagues, thank you.
You're welcome. I wrote you online, but real quick, I just wanted to say that there's a lot of black fiction books out here, and I read a lot. And I just wanted to mention a couple. Carl Weber with Full Figure 7. Electra Roman, The Stalker Chronicles, Black Friday.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Rose, what was the first one you said?
The first one, he's a black author. His name is Carl Weber. And also, they're making movies out of his books. And his name is Carl Weber. He's wrote a lot of books. The one I'm reading now is Full Figure 7. And the book is about full-figured women finding love, going through different changes. The other one I read is Electra Roman Park. It's Stalker Chronicles, Black Friday.
Wow.
Norman. Huh. Tracy Brown, she has some fiction books.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say about one book that a friend of mine has written, and it's Journey to Women by Joy L. Harris. It is such a good book.
Oh, wow, Rose. Thank you.
Women surviving. And also, not to promote this, but I'm a recovering addict. I've been clean for many years from drugs and alcohol.
Oh, congratulations.
And I'm reading a book called Living Clean, The Journey. It is so good for anyone.
Wow,
and
Rose, thanks.
I write poetry, and I'm in the process now of writing a book myself. It's called Rising After Predators, and it's about me being raped by a pimp at 11 years old and how I've been surviving that kind of stuff.
Oh, Rose, thank you so much for being a part of this show. Merry Christmas to you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, my friend. And to Rose Quiello and Roxanne Cody, this show is always about the richness of life, the book show, and you can find it online.